Welcome to Steppin' Out, a reality radio show where you'll hear real people sharing their true stories of what it was like to go over the edge and find their way back. And now, Steppin' Out.
Welcome back to America's 12-Step Radio Show. My name is Mike, and this is Steppin' Out. If you're looking for something fun to do in sobriety, you ought to check out this room of young alcoholics. We're getting down in here. But if you're looking for something fun to do in your sobriety, you can check out the International Conference of Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous. And their website is ICYPA.org. That's ICYPAA.org. You can reach out to us at 12stepmeeting.com. And while you're there, you can listen to previous shows in our archive section. We currently have well over 50 hours of shows that you can either stream on your computer or download to a CD or even your iPod. And, of course, don't forget about our MySpace page. Check out our Young People's and College Radio blog. And make sure you send us a friend request. We'd love to have you aboard our MySpace page. And we're talking to a room full of young people in recovery. And next up, we have our friend Corey. Corey, how you doing? Welcome to Steppin' Out.
Thanks. Not bad. I'm Corey. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Corey.
Hey, Corey. Thanks for being here, dude.
Thanks for having me. I guess as a prelude to my story, I come from a family of... first of all, I'm from Jersey, so I have one strike against me for that. second of all, I...
You mean Joy-Z, right?
Yes, Joy-Z. I've tried so hard to shed that accent. So. No, I come from a family that is very alcoholic and addicted.
That makes you unique, right?
That makes me completely unique. people argue about, like, you know, whether it's whether alcoholism and addiction are genetic or environmentally, you know, whatever learned. To me, I had it from both sides, and it doesn't really matter to me, like, what, you know, which side of that debate I'm on, but I grew up in my family, knowing that my family had a history of drug problems, and my grandfather was an alcoholic and like a violent alcoholic, and my mom was an intravenous drug user when she was, you know, in her late teens, and my uncle has been a junkie since he was like 15 or 16 and is still on methadone maintenance, and when he's in his 50s now, and
so the writing was pretty much on the wall for you, huh, brother?
Yeah, pretty much. And
that's
and
rough.
I also, my stepdad growing up, who I lived with since I was like 6, was a really bad cocaine addict and alcoholic, and so I not only saw it but also had it in my blood or whatever, if you know, I'm from both sides of that. And
how old are you when you're seeing all this going on around you?
I guess I knew what I was seeing by the time I was, you know, like 10-ish or something like that. But
okay.
I mean, the evidence was there before, but I wasn't really old enough to recognize it. But I grew up seeing that, and because of that, developed this attitude that I wasn't going to be like that from very early on. And I decided I wasn't going to do hard drugs, and that was, you know, and to me that meant like cocaine, heroin, crack, speed, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And I started off as, you know, beer and weed is all you need was my motto. And I say that a lot.
Is that a bumper sticker?
It probably is in Jersey. So that was kind of my deal for a while. Like I started smoking pot when I was 12 years old and started drinking shortly after when I was 12 or maybe 13. And from the beginning, you know, I like decided that was all I was going to do, and that was, you know, that was my thing, and doing them excessively wasn't a problem, but doing anything else was. And that lasted for a couple years, and it was weird. It was like I was very sort of strict about that for, you know, until I was, I guess, 15. And you know, by the time I was 15, I was, like, smoking pot every day, multiple times a day, and I was drinking, you know, about every other day, and always drinking to get drunk, always smoking to get really, you know, really high, and never doing it socially or anything like that. And I was really, you know, rigid about that until all of a sudden, I guess it was the summer between my first and second years in high school, and I went to Woodstock 99, actually, is was where it was, and I was, like, I think I'll try ecstasy. I think I'll try opium. I think I'll try, you know, mushrooms and all this stuff. And, like, all of a sudden, it just, you know, the floodgates were opened and that rule was out the window. And
that's at 15.
Yeah, 15. Okay. I think I was 15. I was either about to turn 15, whatever age you're in, whatever age you are before your sophomore year of high school.
Dude, with all those drugs, you're lucky you can remember how old you are now.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm 23 now. So I started, so then, you know, then immediately it was like, it was just sort of this race to try as many drugs as I could and do drugs as, you know, as many drugs as I could and as much as I could. And it was like this whole new world had opened and like every drug was like a new adventure kind of, you know, or it sounded, you know, it felt like that at first and it seemed exciting and it was fun and it was like, and from about that time, even earlier on, I guess, I started to identify myself with that, you know, like that became part of my identity. That became like, for me, it seemed anyways, like a crucial part of who I was and how I set myself apart from other people. And I always felt, for various reasons, I always felt sort of apart from most people. And I still, you know, a lot of times have trouble with, you know, like people in the program talk about being a worker among workers and that kind of thing and not
right.
setting yourself apart. And I still have problems with that. But I,
sure.
that was something that early on, like, you know, I felt different and I, you know, sort of in a reaction to that, made myself, you know, tried to set myself apart as different more
right.
often than I already felt. And
because if you're going to be different, you might as well show
exactly,
it.
Exactly. If you're going to do it and do it, you know. So anyways, that became part of who I was. And I went, and especially I had gone up until high school, I'd gone to these small, like, private schools that were really, like, liberal. And really, like, you know, everyone's parents were hippies and stuff. You know, not everyone, but, you know, it was one of those kind of school, like, what is it called? Bank Street Model or something, I think it's called. Those kind of school, like a Montessori school, sort of. But
okay.
Then in high school, I went to this really big, all-boys Catholic prep school that was, like, a jock school. And it was, like, totally different. And I felt really alienated and like, immediately found my little group of friends who were all, like, stoner kids and all the kids that did drugs. And we sort of, like, identified as that and, like, made ourselves feel like we were cooler because we, like, did drugs and
yeah.
you know, partied more than everyone else. And people would come to us when they would want, you know, when they needed drugs and stuff like that. And that was, like, became a part of how I identified myself. And so then I went through all these phases doing different drugs. And I would get into, like, you know, ecstasy and K. And, like, those were okay because they were club drugs, you know, and it was, like, a party drug. And, you know, like I said, it started with the beer and weed is all you need thing. And I would, like, every time I got to the boundary that I had set, I would get there and then find a reason to push it back a little bit and expand, you know, expanding the boundaries makes it sound like a good thing. But, you know, like, I would break those boundaries that
gotcha.
I had set for myself. And then I would get to the next, you know, the most recent boundaries that I had set, and then I would break them again. And I always had, you know, what it seemed at the time like a good reason for it. And so, you know, at first it was like ecstasy and Special K. Those were party drugs. Those were club drugs. Those were okay. You know, those weren't hard drugs. And my definition of hard drugs got narrower and narrower.
Mm.
And
after a while, it would have to be like acid. I mean, like, not the drug acid, but, like, liquid acid.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I had basically, like, it got to the point where, like, all hard drugs just meant crack, you know, and then I smoked crack, and it was like, okay, well, you know, but I basically, so I started with, you know, like, club drugs and stuff, and yeah, I smoked crack. I'm not afraid to say it. And
I guess everyone laughs at crack smokers.
Crack,
I
like,
know.
Yeah, yeah. I denied it, too, for a while, but yeah, I've smoked some crack in my time. And so then, you know, it was like, you know, party drugs, club drugs, whatever. And then it was like, you know, I got into, like, the Grateful Dead and stuff like that. And, like, and then it was like acid and mushrooms. And those were a spiritual experience. You know, those were, like, those were on another level. Those weren't really drugs, you know. That was okay because for those reasons. And then eventually it was, and by the way, drinking was always in the background this whole time, and smoking pot, you know, like I said before, they were still there, you know, pretty much every day.
So were you drinking as much as you were doing the drugs at the time?
I wasn't drinking as much as I was smoking pot. I was smoking pot every single day.
Okay.
From the time I was, you know, 13 or 14 until the time when I got clean and sober at 21.
So
and
pot's like vitamin C for you at
yeah,
this point.
Yeah, basically. It's like gotcha. A, you know, supplement. It's like coffee in the morning, except
breakfast
all day long.
Breakfast of champions.
Exactly. And, yeah. And
well, it is weed. Weedies. Bad joke. You
yeah.
tell your story.
Yeah. So, and so the, but the alcohol was definitely there. It was there, you know, behind pretty much everything else, as, you know, just, it goes with everything, I guess. And so then anyways, it got to the point where, you know, I had gone through every drug on the list except for, you know, including like cocaine and some other things that I had previously considered hard drugs. And then it got to the point where eventually by the time I was in college, like the only thing I hadn't done was heroin. You know, I had done, lots of cocaine. I had, done crystal meth. I had smoked some crack. And,
you just jumped right into college. How did you get through high school? Very carefully, I assume.
Very carelessly, actually.
Okay.
I mean,
gotcha.
You know, just like doing lots of drugs, having lots of parties, and like my mom is kind of an ex hippie and like smoked a lot of pot at that time, and she was, and so I would Jenny who just spoke was talking about her growing up where everyone's parents like were cool with it and everything, and or you know, or some people's parents, and that was the way my home situation was, you know, I smoked pot with my mom. Some of my friends who my mom knew well would smoke pot with us, and like it was an accepted thing. And like I remember I went to Jamaica one time with my mom, I mean several times with my mom, but one time with my mom and a friend of mine, and we were I think 14 or 13, and she said, you know, basically in almost these words, do whatever you want, but no powders. And so it was basically, you know, exactly
right.
What that, you know, I mean that's what she meant. And,
imagine that, pot smokers going to Jamaica.
Yeah.
I can't fathom it.
Yeah, I know, we're pretty unusual. But so, you know, I just like I would have these parties every weekend in my basement and like that's kind of I mean, you know, and like that was high school. It was just like lots and lots and lots of parties and like barely squeaking by and like doing just as enough as I had to pass my classes and stuff. And you know, only showing up for school like as the bare minimum, as you know, as often as I had to. And
here's a question I love to ask young alcoholics and drug addicts: mm-hmm. Do you remember your SATs?
Yeah, you mean taking them or my score?
Well, either taking them.
Yeah, I remember taking them pretty well. I remember it because I got arrested later that day because it was the same.
See,
yep.
I know.
Yeah.
In radio, we call this a segue. All right.
Yeah.
Let's go there.
Okay, yeah. The day that I took my SATs, I was the same day as the New York City, the Million Marijuana March or whatever it's called, you know, the May Day that they, I don't know if they still do it, but they used to do every year in May.
I don't know, brother. Big, I'm from Joy-Z too.
Are you? I thought you were from, I thought I recognized little Joy-Z in you, but,
back to you, Corey.
So in New York, in Manhattan, we have this, I mean, I'm from Jersey. I'm from right across the river. But so they or we, depending on whether you consider Jersey City to be New York, we like have this marijuana march every year, which I guess is like an excuse for a bunch of people to walk up and down the street smoking pot in big crowds in front of the police. But, you know, it's supposedly for like legalized marijuana and all that stuff, a bunch of hippies smoking pot in Battery Park. And like it was the same day as that. So I was missing that for to take my SATs, and so like I took my SATs and then I left, and I got on the ferry, I think, because it went right to Battery Park, and I got there and like all my friends had been there and already left by the time I got there, and I was by myself, but I went and like I smoked like one joint, and I was like, oh, let me just smoke one joint and then leave, and I got arrested, and I spent the next 3 days in central booking in New York, which is like where everyone gets if you get arrested in New York City, where everyone goes. And, like, that, you know, to me was not, maybe getting arrested at, like, 15 or whatever it was, or 16 or something, and had already been arrested a couple times before by then, should have been, like, a sign that something was starting to go wrong, but, you know, to me it seemed normal.
Another notch on the belt.
Yeah, sort of, yeah. Okay. And, so I do remember my SAT. But, so to jump back sort of to college, because that's kind of when things for me really started to, you know, I really feel like I started to hit my bottom. I was in college. I had kind of went back from doing all these drugs to just mostly drinking. As you know, well, you know, some people in college drink sometimes, from what I understand. and you know, it was just
I'm shocked. My jaw just dropped on top of the microphone.
I know, it's nobody talks about it, you know. But I went to college and it was kind of like Animal House but without the frats. You know what I mean? Like and it was, I mean, you know, it was really like the first week, literally, that I was in college. I was in a dorm my first year. The first week that we were there, my roommate and I got written up for playing beer pong in our room. Like, we ripped the door off the closet and put it up on two garbage cans to make a beer pong table. And we got... Beer pong, yeah. It's, I guess it's sort of a newer phenomenon in college. But, yeah, it's a drinking
game. Boy, you're
making
me feel old, Corey.
It's okay.
I'm not familiar with beer pong.
Beer pong, yeah. It's, some places they call it Beirut, I think. But, anyways, it's a drinking game with cups and ping pong balls, and it's kind of like basketball.
What happened to quarters?
Yeah, quarters is that's old school,
huh?
Yeah. But so anyways, we got busted the first week and continued to do it after that. We were just more careful about it. And you know, but we got busted the first week for drinking, got written up, and had to like do community service in the cafeteria or whatever. And like that was just sort of the rest of the.
I'm sorry, I gotta ask you, what is community service in the cafeteria like?
Oh, put it this way. The first time I did it, I never ate in the cafeteria again. Seriously.
Do you have to take orders from like this cafeteria lady has like
a
huge
hairnet.
mole with hair growing out of it?
Yeah,
sorry.
Several of them. Yeah.
I apologize if there's any ladies with moles with hairs growing out. Corey, back to you. I'm getting myself in trouble tonight.
Yeah, no, so anyways, the cafeteria lady, we got written up and, like, got in a lot of trouble and got written up a couple other times for, like, smoking pot and drinking and almost got kicked out of the dorms, and one of my friends did, really because he took the rap for us and that kind of stuff, like, just, you know, always getting into trouble. It was, like, you know, I've heard people in like, rehab, like, in counseling, drug counselors and stuff say that, you know, a key sign of someone having a substance abuse problem is that they continue to use despite negative consequences. And that, to me, like, I had negative consequences of various, you know, shapes and sizes for a really long time, and they didn't seem, you know, no bells went off that it, for most people, would have. And it didn't seem, you know, weird to me. It seemed normal. It seemed like, you know, and part of it was I surrounded myself with people who drank and got high like I did, so it seemed normal because in the context of a bunch of other addicts and alcoholics, you know, it seems, you know, it doesn't seem like such a big deal. But
sure.
So the first year in college was really just a lot of drinking excessively, which is probably a lot of people's experience in college. And then the year after that, I started doing heroin. And
let's talk about the excessive college drinking a little bit, because
sure.
You said it's probably a lot of other people's experience. What
mm-hmm.
sets you apart from people that just do a lot of drinking in college and then they stop at some point? You know, what makes you different as, I'm assuming, an alcoholic and a drug addict from maybe just the hard partying college guy or gal?
That's a really good question.
Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, and it's hard to answer. I'm not sure I have a really good answer for it, but... it is definitely something that I noticed, and part of what clued me in to the fact that I might be an addict / alcoholic / whatever. And part of that was that, you know, after a few years later, I don't want to like jump ahead and get back into the story. I will try to answer your question, but you know, after a few years later, and I my friends were graduating or getting close to graduating, and I had been like an intravenous drug user for a few years of time, going back and forth between alternating with that and drinking every day excessively from the time I got up to the time I passed out or went to sleep or however you want to look at it. And
right.
And at that point, like, I started to realize that all my other friends were starting to graduate and they were starting to get jobs or they were working and going to school, and I was doing none of them. And I had been kicked out or was like getting kicked out and let back in and put on academic probation, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm.
And that's when it started to sort of, you know, bell started to kind of go off that, you know, should have been going off a long time ago.
And how old were you at this point?
At this point, I was, I guess, like 20.
Okay.
20-ish, 20, 21. You know, I mean, I can remember clearly times when a specific period where I was drinking every day. I would get up around noon and like go to the liquor store and like get a bottle of Jack Daniels or Southern Comfort or something like that, and then come back and I would sit. And I was living in an apartment with a few of my friends who were all in school, and I wasn't in school anymore at this point. I'd been kicked out, and I would sit there, and they would all come home in the afternoon from work or class or whatever they were doing, and I would be sitting there getting drunk and with a bottle, just drinking out of the bottle by myself in the living room, maybe like playing video games with the TV on or something like that, like doing nothing, just drinking. And they would come home, and like I would ask them if they wanted to drink with me, and they like would just give me this look like, no, I do not want to drink with you at like 4 p.m. on a Tuesday, you know. And
so they're starting to hold the mirror up in front of you now.
Yeah, and yeah. And you know, then I took some time off when I eventually ended up taking some time off from school when I got clean and sober, and then coming back and none of my friends were still there because they had all graduated and they were all working and had jobs, or some of them were in grad school or law school or whatever and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And like I was still, you know, had been in college for almost 4 years, like almost long enough to graduate, and had less than half of the credits that I needed to graduate, and realized something was seriously wrong. You know, that, you know, everyone else had gone through, like you said, gone through that period. Not everyone else. Lots of my other friends had gone through that period of excessive drinking, the Animal House kind of, you know, thing. And like, then once it was like college was over and it's like, okay, it's getting close to the time I have to like get my act together.
Right.
And they were able to do that. And I wasn't. And, it didn't even occur to me to do that. It wasn't even like a thing. Like, I mean, I was trying to stop for a while before I did, but it wasn't even like, it just didn't seem like a viable option to me to like have that kind of life of like just put everything aside and just, you know, have a normal life, quote unquote. So
what finally brought you to your bottom?
Well, I sort of like had hit a bottom and was kind of like on that bottom for a little while, I feel like, and I was like in this rut, and I knew that I needed help from somewhere else, which is the second step. And I knew that I needed, you know, something greater than myself, you know, just meaning something outside of myself, to help me. But I just couldn't, you know, the situation I was in, I couldn't really do anything about it, or I didn't know how, I should say.
Okay.
And so I had to get arrested and, like, spend a few days in jail and then go into treatment. And I was in inpatient rehab for a long time, which not everyone, it's necessary for them to do that. For me, I think it was, at least at that time. And I was in treatment for 5 months, and I actually relapsed a bunch of times while I was in there, like, you know, I mean, that's a whole other story.
And
but
they didn't throw you out?
No, they didn't, and they almost did. I almost got thrown out a bunch of times, but something, for some reason, they had, you know, they had a little bit of faith in me, and that made the difference, I guess. And so, you know, they took us to meetings every day, and they like sort of gave us an introduction to the whole 12-step thing, and so then when I came back, like Jenny, who just said, like, she didn't even really think she wanted to stay sober, and I felt, you know, but that was like the only thing that had worked, sort of. And that was kind of my experience. Like, I didn't even came back from after being in treatment for 5 months, didn't even still think I really wanted to stay clean and sober for a long term, on a long term basis. But I knew that I needed to stay out of trouble, and that the only thing that had been able to help me stop drinking and stop getting high was going to meetings. So yeah. I started doing that sort of by default, you know, and I almost feel like I got clean and sober, you know, in spite of myself. And so, I just started going to meetings. I found the Young People's Meetings in New York, which I had had some in Miami. I had found some in Miami too, where I was in treatment, and those made a huge difference because I was able to like find a group of people that I would have hung out with before I got sober, you know. And like, I can go to any meeting anywhere and relate to what people are saying, but I need to find people that I can like hang out with on the weekends and that I can like develop deeper relationships with and like friendships with. And you know, I need to like build a life around, you know, like sober people, and that has made a huge difference. And so I kind of just started going to meetings and like taking suggestions, even though I thought they were stupid. And like, I thought a lot of the stuff was stupid, and I thought a lot of it was corny, but I did it anyways because you know, it seemed to work, and it did. And
how long has it been for you now?
Now about 2.5 years, and you know, my life is better than it's ever been.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. We appreciate you being here, Corey.
Thank you.
I want to thank both of our guests this hour, both Corey and Jenny. There you go. And you've been listening to America's 12-Step Radio Show. My name is Mike, and this is Steppin' Out.